build towards, because there's no amount of cops that we can have that will patrol up and down Hawthorne Boulevard at 1 a.m. that will have the same effect on public safety as a concert getting out at 1 a.m. and people walking up and down sidewalks and visiting businesses and bars and restaurants. We are what can actually make this community safe, and that's how we bring positive opportunities to public spaces to encourage good behavior and at the same time discourage bad behavior.
So another sort of more specific issue that some of you have brought up already is climate change and the effects that climate change is having on the city of Portland. Think just of the heat dome of the past few years, the repeated heat waves and ice storms, and the fact that East Portland itself is traditionally lacking in tree cover. What are some ways that the city council and that you on the city council could address those issues as they continue to unfold? Candace?
Yeah, I think what's important to remember about climate change is that it is not in the future, it is now. And the decisions that we make in growing our city are all climate related, because when the number one and number two emitters of greenhouse gases are transportation and buildings, then when we're talking about the investments in infrastructure, like making sure that we have more bus lanes, making sure that we have tree canopy, all of these things, how we're, you know, we all know that we have a housing crisis and we need to expedite housing production. And there's been some discussions this year in the city council where it was like, well, maybe we could loosen these environmental regulations and that'll help us build faster. And that is not the right approach, right? Because we have to build into the future, and building into the future means including climate protections for residents. And so I think definitely the Portland Clean Energy Fund is a really important opportunity to actually funnel dollars to that work, because all of that means nothing if there's no money to invest. But we have the money. I have a lot of opinions as an organization that receives PSEF dollars about how we could improve the delivery of those dollars. How can we make sure that we're equitably distributing them and, you know, not falling back into status quo, which is not having a strategic targeted approach, because as we've discussed, East Portland disproportionately feels the impacts of climate change. It is an environmental justice community, and these frontline community members need to be also at the forefront of deciding what happens next. And I think PSEF is an opportunity. I think having district representation is an opportunity to invest. But overall, my commitment is to ensuring that we understand as a city that every decision we make actually does have a climate nexus and acting accordingly.
We're going to take a very short break, and then we will be back with Jamie Dunphy and Candace Avalos.
Listening to KBOO Community Radio, I'm Althea Billings, the news director. In this episode, we're revisiting Running on Air, our Portland Candidate Roundtable series. We're hearing from the winners of District 1. That includes Jamie Dunphy, Candace Avalos, and Loretta Smith. consider supporting the important work we do here at KABU with a donation during our Catalog of Connections drive. We're aiming to raise $75,000 by the end of the year. Can you help us out? Donate online at kabu.fm/give or text the word KABU to 44321 to show your support for grassroots community radio like this. Let's get back to the show.
And I'd just like to jump back into the conversation here. We had a listener call in. So Joan asks, how would you approach improving conditions in East Portland while avoiding gentrification?
This is a huge part of our mission, actually, at Verde, because we have been working in the Cully neighborhood, which is not technically our district, but adjacent in District 2. And what we see is, and what we all know and understand about gentrification, is that when you give community members who have lacked in resources, you invest in them, then they get pushed out because the just generally the market goes up, right? The prices go up. Then people say, oh, this is an attractive place to live. Look, they got sidewalks. They've got a park, right? And so that is why that happens at a very like layman's term like view. And so I think what's important in some of the strategies that we've been doing in Cully that I think we could apply in East Portland, one of them is the tax increment financing. And it's important for people to know and understand TIF has typically been a tool of gentrification, actually. But what we did in the Cully neighborhood in the first ever community-led TIF district that we created an infrastructure. We made this kind of charter, essentially, with Prosper Portland and the Housing Bureau to put some strong boundaries of how we're going to use the revenue generated in a way that is driven by the voices of the people that live in that community. Because what has typically happened is these TIF districts, they generate, you know, dollars, and then they end up pushing people out because they put in new amenities, they don't talk to the communities, and that is what, you know, Portland has historically done. Albina is a perfect example of that. And so I think that, you know, there's some discussion about, you know, TIF districts in East Portland, and I'm keeping a close eye on it because while this is a really innovative way that we're trying to approach anti-displacement, we need to be watchdogs on it because the market does all kinds of things. Like, we can't guarantee that it will stay community driven unless we continue to advocate for it. So I think that's a really good reason why having representatives in East Portland combined with this discussion we're having about East Portland's TIF is a good way for us as counselors to be able to oversee that and ensure that it is not displacing people. But I think ultimately, you know, we need to lift up our entire community. Every single person, no matter your income, deserves to live in a community rich with amenities. And so while we're also working to build the, you know, economic strength of our communities, when we're doing that also in our infrastructure projects, I think together we'll be able to find a way to keep people in their homes and in their communities. So that's the goal.
Personally, I work in the homeless services. You can call it an industry, I think, is a safe word to use. But there's very much a large mix of players, a large mix of different funds that tax dollars are going into. And a lot of the ways that that can play out and the way it can seem from a outsider and inside observer is that all of these players who are being given this funding are not working together. And so specifically, we can name it, the county and the city often seem to be butting heads about policy. What do you see? You'll be city representatives. So from that perspective, how would you engage with that head-to-head situation? Jamie? You know,
I think that Portland has a little bit of the remnants of the Cowboy West in us. The current commission form of government that the voters so overwhelmingly said we need to be done with. But that form of government decentralized power in a lot of ways that it encouraged other elected officials to point fingers and say, it's not my job, it's that person's job. That same level of lack of clear leadership and lack of clear responsibility within the form of government applies to also the dynamic of having the city, the county, metro, the state, and feds all pointing fingers at each other without a common definition of success. This new form of government is really more about voting, you know, trying to find collaboration to get to 7 votes out of 12 very different opinions of where the city should possibly be going. And if we are going to be successful, we need to find people who have demonstrated track records of building coalitions and building towards consensus. If we are successful at doing that and finding the right kind of city council members who can find that path forward in within the city government, I think that means that they're also going to be quite adept at being and well positioned to try and extend that coalition building leadership opportunity across the weird kinds of government that we have. We're going to need, I mean, nobody believes that the city council is going to solve homelessness. They're not. The state needs to be playing a more direct role. The feds need to be playing a more direct role. And if we are doing our job as voters and we are sending 12 people to City Hall who can actually be collaborative and build the path forward towards success that actually delivers on services, I think we're going to be in a really good spot. This new form of government will at least encourage leadership in some meaningful way.
The housing in general is a major topic of conversation, a major crisis across the city of Portland that manifests in its own way in East Portland, and the way that it ties in with the homelessness crisis that we are facing. How would you approach those intertwined topics and some of the ongoing collaborations with the county, for example, and multiple nonprofits, as well as, you know, ongoing efforts to address those issues that, you know, will remain when the council changes over. How do you plan to address that?
I don't believe that we're lacking in ideas for these solutions. We're lacking in strategic leadership. Because ultimately, what I've learned in the last couple of years as somebody who has been in rooms with housing and homelessness providers, the thing that I hear the most from them is just that nobody talks to them, nobody seeks out their expert advice. It gets overly politicized to the point where people get put into these camps instead of saying, we all have answers to these problems, but you have to combine those answers. And, you know, of course, as a leader, right, you're navigating budgets, you're navigating politics, you're navigating what's short-term versus long-term. And I think ultimately, you know, all of the ideas, I mean, Thomas named a whole bunch of them, which are really good best practices is what we're saying. And all of the candidates are saying it. But what we need is actually leadership, and we need collaboration, because what I think a really good example of this disconnect between the city and the providers working with these communities is what happened with the TAF site, right? The Urban Alchemy got flown in from California to come manage this site. But what people don't understand is the reason why is because there's a lack of relationships. The burden that that site was going to put on our on our providers, our homelessness providers, they were like, these are the things that work, these are not the things that work, right? And so, but they were ignored. And so they weren't brought in as true partners. And so we're outsourcing, you know, support for something that we have so much resource, human and financial resource here in the city of Portland to address. So I could sit here and rattle off a lot of policies, but I think ultimately my values are around making sure that we are leading, and that as a good partner to the county, to all the different intergovernmental levels, and to the people that work on the ground with folks. I mean, I'm on the board of Street Roots. I hear from our unhoused community all the time. And the most frustrating thing they feel is that it's not that they don't want help. It's that when they get help, it's never what they need. And it's not consistent. Right. So it's like, OK, we're going to start putting you through the system, and then somehow they fall through the cracks and then forgotten. And so understandably, people who have been jostled around across the city, they're hesitant when they see a city worker say, hey, I'm here to help you, because they have a lived experience that shows that that's not the case. So I really think that more important than the actual policies and strategies is the leadership.
A key piece of both the homelessness crisis and a potential solution to it is housing itself and availability of housing. And obviously that is a very complex multi-jurisdictional issue. just simply, how do you think that you as a future city representative could make something happen there?
We absolutely have been, we've been incentivizing the wrong type of housing for decades. When I was working in the city in 2019, the Joint Office of Homeless Services said there were about 4,000 people sleeping on the streets that night. And about a month later, the Housing Bureau came back and said that there were about 4,200 vacant hotel or housing units in the city. Almost all of them were at the luxury end of the spectrum, mm-hmm. almost all of them in the towers and South Waterfront. Mm-hmm. Our incentive structures are backwards, and we simply need more housing of all kinds. You know, there's no really good reason to say, or for reason for why it takes sometimes twice as long to build in the city of Portland as it does in neighboring jurisdictions of Gresham or Happy Valley or Milwaukee. They're not getting half the quality of housing, they're just building it faster. Our systems don't work. Our systems don't incentivize getting these things moving. The last thing I will say simply is that we are at the same time having a conversation in our community about the number of neighbors who are sleeping on the streets, and in the same section of the Oregonian seeing about how there are hundreds of thousands of square feet of vacant office space in downtown, that there are entire buildings sitting empty. Not every building will be able to be converted, but a significant number of those buildings could be converted into not necessarily even affordable rate housing, but market rate housing or alternative shelters or SROs. Anything that will absolutely help. The city should be bending over backwards to try and find those willing property owners who are willing to convert their existing structures into any kind of housing. And at the same time, the city needs to be absolutely opportunistic and start bidding on those properties when the landowners or the building owners refuse to work with the city and they inevitably go up for auction at foreclosure. Montgomery Wards, or the Montgomery Park building rather, sold for over $300 million in 2019, and just a few months ago, sold for about, like, just slightly over $30 million. Why was the city of Portland not a bidder on that? Why was Prosper Portland or the Portland Housing Bureau not there and converted into 1,000 SROs, single room occupancies, shared bathrooms, shared kitchen spaces for people, so that we have alternatives for people to go? There's no creative thinking about this, and there's no urgency around it. And the last thing I'll say is that I think one of the biggest opportunities for housing is in East Portland, because it's the last place with empty land. And we've just never had a champion who will walk with the developer and say, this empty spot right here on 102nd and Halsey, you need to go. This is a perfect place for you to build a fourplex. This vacant spot on Sandy and 108th, where it used to be a burned down dry cleaners, this would be a perfect 6 unit. There's no champions for the neighborhoods. And I think that really matters. That's when an elected official is from that community, change happens and investment comes. And this is an opportunity that we have for this new election. And hopefully whoever gets elected in District 1 will take full advantage of that and lean hard on the opportunities to bring housing wherever we can in East Portland.
Thank you. And I would like to bring in some comments from our listeners who have called in and get your responses to those. Pretty much on this topic. Dwayne says, we saw a major wealth transfer to the richest among us during the pandemic. How do you propose we should address the housing and affordability crisis while housing is still treated as a commodity? And Joan, another listener, asked, why is housing standing empty that we've already built? Should the city take action? And you've addressed some of that already, but I'm curious if you have any responses to those.
Well, I have two specific policy ideas that I think are worth considering. One, I don't know enough about it, but I'd like to have more of an academic understanding of the concept of social housing. We mentioned specifically, you're right, the city doesn't build housing. We don't have the bricks and sticks, and we don't own it on the back side. But I'd be really interested in a public ownership model that where individuals who are living there, maybe of mixed incomes, have an opportunity to have a say in how their homes are run and are operated, and maybe even some opportunities for generational wealth building. Additionally, I'm interested in having a conversation about a vacancy tax. As we know, there are units in this city that were built using public investment and public incentives that have never been tenanted in the years that they've been built. That shouldn't be allowed to happen. There should be some basic urgency around getting our housing stock used, because it's takes decades for all this stuff to come online for the kind of capacity that we actually need, and it's criminal to allow these properties to sit vacant in hopes of getting higher rents later.
And we do have a question from a listener, Tim. How do you think Portlanders should stay in communication with their counselors in the new system? And he also suggests a regular newsletter.
One thing that I've been saying since I ran last time, so I ran in 2020 for city council, and it was a really eye-opening experience in many ways, but I think one thing that has stuck with me is why we don't use the same kinds of grassroots strategies that we use when we're campaigning when we're in office. To be fair, I honestly don't believe that the current city councilors in the current form of government, they don't have capacity to do constituent services. And so that is why we made these changes, so that we can have full-time people living in their community dedicated to those kinds of services, including things like newsletters, including things like having regular community meetings for feedback. And I think that includes things like knocking on people's doors and talking to them directly. That is what I intend to do as a city councilor. Us staying grounded is a really important part of our job. And I think I've heard another candidate say this, I'm totally stealing it from her, but I love this idea where she says, we need to make sure that we are at least 3 of the 5 days of the week in our district, because we know that East Portlanders, they're not going to come all the way down to City Hall in downtown to talk to us, and that's not the best way to reach them. And so I think us really committing to this new infrastructure with the district offices and creating just various types of events or procedures, because, you know, again, we're going to have to create all of this. I'm not fully sure how this is going to work, but I would love to see things like having like just East Portland City Council meetings, right? Like, we're going to have larger ones with everybody, but I think we should have our own things too, and I think that's going to go a long way in people feeling like we're accessible to them. So what I'm understanding right now about how they're structuring the new government is they're really going to be putting a lot of onus on 311. So right now, 311, you can call with kind of lots of different requests. But it's my understanding that the city administrator office is trying to make that a more central part of a way that people can access their government, and like reporting a pothole or saying, you know, I need this service in this community. So it's on my platform. One of my platform points is I really think we need to beef up and staff up our 311 system to just have a more consistent, easy way for people to just reach us, and then that be sorted to us as appropriate. But I think us having a number that we can turn to and we can tell community members that this is the one of the quick ways that you can be heard, I think is going to be huge.
Right, and we are running a little low on time, so this might be a bit of a heavy question to pack into the last few minutes here, but Portlanders are very angry. I think if I you know, not everyone and not all the time, but that seems to be a very animating feature of the electorate right now. In office, how, and maybe this is a little vague, but you probably thought about it, how would you absorb that anger? Because a lot of it can take the form of stigma against people experiencing homelessness, against just people who are unlike the speaker. Can ask for very quick, brutal solutions to very deep problems. And so I just, again, that's a little general, but I'm just curious what you've thought about as about that dynamic.
Yeah, I mean, I share and understand Portlanders' anger and frustration. I'm also angry because it is clear that our city has not delivered on our promise. And so I think what I'm also understanding, just I'll talk about my neighbors in particular. So I live in this kind of missing middle housing, if you will. I live in like a little townhome community, and we've got an active WhatsApp chat where we, you know, keep each other safe and updated. And I think that has been such a microcosm of what I see is happening in the city. I see this like really strong tension between feeling like I want my street to be safe. I want to walk my dog and not be harassed. I don't want to run into needles. I don't want to run into trash, and an understanding that when they sweep, people know that when people get swept, they don't have options, right? They know that they're getting displaced, and they know it's a waste of money and it's a waste of time. And so I think what I've learned just talking to people on the doorstep is, you know, you can kind of disarm people's anger a little bit by showing them that there are real pathways forward, and by showing them that this representation is going to make a difference in how they're heard. But, you know, I think the biggest thing for us is to really understand and accept where that anger is coming from and find solutions. That's ultimately what Portlanders want. And I think this new form of government and this type of representation, it's going to start to chip away at that anger, is my hope.
I've been your host, Sam Bowman. Thanks for listening.
You've been listening to an encore presentation of Running on Air, KBOO's Portland Candidate Roundtable series. We've been hearing what the future city councilors from District 1 told us on the campaign trail. Tune in for all of the episodes of KBOO News Year in Review now until January 1st. I want to give a special thank you to all the KBOO folks that helped to make Running on Air happen. Thank you to the hosts, Lenita Duke, Barbara Bernstein, Don Merrill, Corey Elia, Annette Newell, Lisa Loving, Sam Bowman, and Reed Johnson. Thank you to the editors, Eric Leuschner and Ray Bodwell. Thank you to Ender Black, Arthur Rosato, Bob Davis, Nate Kapp, and Asia Hawthorne for all your help. I also want to thank KBOO interns Patches and Alex. None of the important work that we do here can happen without the support of amazing volunteers and from listeners like you. If you've appreciated KBOO this year, consider supporting us with a donation. It's our end of year membership drive, and it's a great time to do it. KBOO.fm/give is the place to donate. You can also text KBOO to 44321 or mail us a check. We love getting mail. Our address is 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, 97214. I'm Althea Billings, News Director here at KBOO. Thanks for being with us, and see you next year.
Listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282 BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220 HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Don't know what to get your loved ones this season? Check out kboo.fm/merch and snag some KBOO swag to support community media in style. While you're shopping for gifts, you can make donations to help support KBOO's